Case number 11-5565,
Good morning, Council. Good morning, Council.
Your Honor, good morning. I am Al Riccardi. I am here on behalf of the appellants, the Hennigas, and their related businesses, Sarah Farms and GH Dairy. This is the second time I stand before this court on what amounts to free substantive matters. This is a case that was dismissed for a second time by the district judge, this time on a 12B motion to dismiss, notwithstanding the fact that the inferences are to be drawn in favor of the Hennigas, notwithstanding the fact that the direct court case that controls this matter, Fortich, reached this court on a motion for summary judgment, not on a motion to dismiss. And the court below, in dealing with my client's constitutional claims, the bill of attainder claims as well as equal protection and due process, set up standards that aren't applicable in these types of cases. It obviously disbelieved the well-pled allegations in the complaint. It also refused to allow a supplemental complaint to be filed, which would have, among other things, given more context to the reason why the passage of the statute at issue, the MREA, was done at the behest of industry, the dairy industry in particular, and against my clients because of the fact that they were becoming significant competitors in that industry. If, in fact, this court were to look at the Fortich decision, one of the issues that was discussed, among other things, in dealing later on with punishment was the fact that a reviewing court needs to have the complete context of the passage of the statute before it to determine, among other things, whether it was passed for reasons that either weren't rationally related or certainly weren't permitted. And the Bill of Attainder makes it clear historically.
It's completely directed at the punishment of, or the visiting of negative consequence, at least, on completed acts. This statute, at least facially, regulates future conduct rather than visiting consequence upon completed actions. So the Fortich is not really on point on anything more than procedural lines, is it?
Judge, I think it is directly on point. If first of all, we get to specificity, which is the issue that the court dismissed on. Dr. Fortich wasn't named in that statute.
He was described with laser-like precision, to borrow a phrase we used in a First Amendment case once.
I understand. And as were the Hennigas and their businesses, both GH and Sarah Farms.
The difference is that Dr. Fortich was based, as Judge Santel has already said, based on past conduct. He couldn't escape the description.
He could escape.
Your clients can escape the description.
Yeah.
My clients can't escape.
They can organize their business in a different way.
No.
What, they can't?
They could, but here's why there's no distinction in reality between Dr. Fordage and my clients. Dr. Fordage could, in fact, decide, like anyone else that was, in fact, potentially impacted by that statute, not to seek custody. So it was the future conduct, just like in Brown, by the way. What could have happened is Archie Brown could have decided either not to run for the board or to resign from the board. The choice of punishments, whether they be economic or otherwise, is not...
This is not punishment here, at least facially. It's regulation that will be the same upon your client as upon anyone else attempting the same business plan. Shake your head at me all you want. It does, counsel.
No. Judge, I'll explain why it's not. The reality is, because it was entered with laser-like precision, to use your phrase, there is no one, with regard to GH, for example, GH was selling milk into California. GH now has to pay a penalty to producers in Arizona, not California, for California sales. No one else has to do that. And at the same time,
anyone else who tried the same business plan would have to do that, right?
They may have to do that, unless they're in Nevada, Judge, which, as part of this whole issue, as we put in the supplemental complaint, at the same time that they were addressing this issue, Nevada can pour all milk it wants to over
also
into California.
The state represented by Harry Reid.
It is, and in fact, one of the things that we look at, Judge, when looking at the context of a decision and looking at the context of a statute, is those very issues. For example, in Forotich, there was
Forotich, what was the name of the statute?
Yeah, well, it was the Elizabeth Morgan Act.
Who was Elizabeth Morgan?
And here's what happens, Judge, over
Who
time.
Was Elizabeth Morgan?
Elizabeth Morgan was clearly the daughter. But you know what, Judge? What happens is Congress gets a little bit more educated as this court decides to tell it, when you do this the next time, don't use the name of the child. Do something else.
The point you're making here, though, would be to say that regulatory statutes of future economic conduct are bills of attainder if only one entity has been attempting to do this in the past. And I'm not sure that that's a good precedent for this court to be making.
But you don't have to go down that road at all. What you have to do is you have to say, Congress, you have to pass a bill that doesn't target a particular individual, doesn't limit.
What happens when Congress sees a problem that's caused by one major player in the economic market and wants to regulate that conduct?
When they want to regulate that conduct, they regulate it generally into the future. They don't limit it to a specific individual.
No, I'm saying there's one player in the market that is engaged in some type of activity that Congress thinks is skewing the market. And Congress comes in and regulates that activity to say you can't do that. And it only applies to one player. Is there anything in the Constitution that limits Congress from doing that?
Congress is limited by the Bill of Attainder Clause, among other things, because of this reason. In your situation, it is, we may not know who the individual is.
Congress knows it's player X, and they're doing something to skew the market, and we don't want that to happen.
And
we don't want player X to be able to do that. And so we describe anyone who's doing what Player X is doing. Right now, Player X is the only one that's doing it. Mm-hmm. Anyone who does that, you may not do that in the future. You want us to say that Congress has to wait till there's more than one player skewing the market?
No, I don't. Whether it's one or more, and to answer your question, is not the important issue. What's the important issue is that if an individual is, in fact, doing something that is against the law, not with settled law for 70 years, which is what we have here.
I'm talking about changing the law.
Don't argue with the hypothetical.
Let me finish that.
What they're doing is perfectly lawful, but Congress looking at it says that's not the way we want to arrange our markets.
Then in fact, if that's what they want to do, and they do it uniformly, and they don't accept out of it a whole class of people, like people in Nevada or otherwise, what you've got in that situation is it's facially neutral, and they're not attempting to deal with a specific person on behalf of a class. What we have in this situation is it is clearly special interest legislation that's targeted.
Targeted. No question. 250 years of tradition of special interest litigation. It's called the First Amendment.
It is. They can go ahead and do that, except, of course, the First Amendment is balanced as a bulwark by the Bill of Attainder Clause.
But this is, you can make a very good argument that this is an unfair and irrational regulatory scheme. You would have at least one member of this court convinced before you even started that this is an unfair and irrational scheme. But that doesn't make it a bill of attainder. Any scheme that protects an industry from the market is unfair, at least to the market, certain probably to competitors, potential competitors. But that the precedent we would be setting is breathtaking if we said that Congress can't in those schemes include regulation of future conduct based upon past conduct.
You can, in fact.
Any statute, presumably, somebody's been doing something or Congress wouldn't bother outlawing it. So therefore, there's a past conduct that has triggered Congress's action. But when all they're doing is regulating future conduct, that's not generally been held to be a bill of attainder.
They're regulating future conduct based upon past conduct on behalf of industry, while at the same time in the same bill exempting portions of industry which they say were causing the same issues. And so in that situation, you need to look in the context of whether or not that is permissible or in fact is a bill of attainder. It is specific to that context, not generally as in the hypothetical that Judge Griffith gave me.
Can I just ask you a practical question?
Sure.
This is facially neutral, and the description here says, I guess, a producer-handler who does more than 3 million pounds a month. Is that the description?
That's one of the portions of the statute.
So why wouldn't it be possible for your client to just do slightly less than that?
Well, Judge,
Wouldn't that mean they were not covered then?
Well, my client has an entire business that is built up that would require him to sell cows, change his business, take away what he has done for over a decade simply because the industry doesn't like it.
Oh, I understand.
And I had reserved 5 minutes of my time, and I think I'm into that.
You're down to about 3.5.
Okay, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Okay. Hear from the respondent, or Appellee.
May it please court, my name is Kelsey Brown Corcoran. I'm here on behalf of the United States. The Milk Regulatory Equity Act was enacted in order to close two loopholes in the milk regulatory regime. The plaintiffs had developed business models that were specifically designed to take advantage of those loopholes. In particular, the success of their businesses turned on the fact that their competitors were subject to pricing and pooling requirements, and they were not. And it's just a matter of basic economics. When you have an industry where certain businesses are subject
to... One person's loophole is another one's opportunity.
Exactly, yes. When you have, though, a market where some businesses are subjected to pricing requirements and other regulations, and some businesses are not, you're going to have market disruption, and that's the disruption that the agency had identified when it...
Maybe one of the reasons why you shouldn't have this kind of scheme regulatory.
This is how you litigate socialism.
I have no comment on that. But it's also the market disruption that the Congress is attempting to address when it enacted the MREA in 2006. And the district court correctly dismissed the bill of attainder challenge at the specificity stage. The Supreme Court said unequivocally in the American Communications case that if a piece of legislation is targeted at present or future conduct, then it is not a bill of attainder, and it elaborated on that 10 years later in Communist Party versus Subversive Activities Control Board, where it specifically tied that requirement to the specificity prong of the inquiry. And just to add to what Judge Griffith was saying earlier, there's a profound difference between targeting a problem and targeting a person. It happens all the time that the actions of an identifiable class of people make evident a problem in the law that Congress then decides to address. That is not a bill of attainder. If it were, it would be quite remarkable that the restrictions that would place on Congress's actions.
The opposing counsel did not mention Bell South, and that's a very good reason.
Yes, I will also instead focus
feel free
on
to yeah. The fact that I dissented does not keep it from being yeah. the law.
Well, and Bell South was a case where the Bells were specifically named, so the specificity requirement was
specificity
not an issue.
Was easily met, and yet the regulation of their future conduct and only their future conduct was held not to be a bill of taint.
Yes.
Doesn't Nixon versus GSA have the same quality about it? Or was it not as specific there? I mean, there was no question.
Oh, it was very specific.
Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah, he was named in that case as well. It was not as specific. I want to talk a little bit about the Nevada exemption.
Yeah.
It actually does, there's a reasonable explanation for it that perhaps isn't apparent on its face. Most regions of the country are either regulated at the federal level under a federal market order, or they have state regulations. So California is an example of a state that has its own pricing and pooling requirements and therefore is exempt from the federal system. Nevada, both before the MREA and after the MREA, was regulated at the state level. Nevada has its own pricing requirements.
Arizona did not.
Arizona did not, and Arizona still does not. It's under a federal order. So the reason that the MREA clarified the Nevada exemption was because there was a quirk in the law where Clark County, which is a part of Nevada, was under a federal marketing order, and the rest of Nevada was regulated at the state level. However, in 1999, I'm sorry to get into the weeds here, but this is actually the background for the exemption. In 1999, Congress had exempted Clark County from the federal order, even though it was still under the order. And so Nevada moved in, imposed its state requirements on Clark County, but you still had a quirk where if you were a plant, on the Clark County plants was what the exemption was targeted at. If you were a Clark County plant, you could still sell into Arizona without abiding by the requirements. So that's the only practical effect that exemption had, was to eliminate that quirk where Clark County plants could sell into Arizona. That's the background of that exemption. So to the extent that plaintiffs rely heavily in their reply brief on Nevada, it's really a red herring. Then just as a final point, although I'm happy to answer any other questions, on the pleading standard, this court is aware that it dismisses constitutional challenges, particularly facial constitutional challenges, at the pleading stage all the time. And it is particularly appropriate in this case because plaintiffs were successful in arguing before this court in their last appeal that it was not necessary to go through the administrative exhaustion process because there was nothing the agency could add. And this court agreed at the end of its decision that there would be no benefit to sending this to the agency. And so that's why we're here today, and that's why this was decided at the pleading stage as well. It's hard to imagine even what kind of discovery you could have in a case like this. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Kim. Thanks. I believe the appellant had 3.5 minutes for rebuttal. Go ahead, counsel.
Your Honor, the Supreme Court precedent and this court's precedent makes it clear that a bill of attainder can, in fact, deal with future conduct. Both the Civil War cases and also the communist cases, particularly Brown, deal with future conduct, as does Forotich for the reasons I articulated. As does...
What do you do with Bell South?
Your Honor?
What do you do with Bell South?
Your Honor, with regard, first of all, we're dealing with the issue of specificity. And as you pointed out,
Bell South was as specific as you can get.
Correct.
Assume we've got specificity for a moment here. What do you then do with, we're assuming it only purposes this discussion, but okay. What do you then do with Bell South?
With regard to Bell South.
Name the companies in Bell South. The statute named the company.
That I understand, Judge. The cases are clear that you can, in fact, do this not only by specific name, and that's not a requirement.
An anti-competitive threat posed by the Bell operating companies and the legislative history did not evidence punitive intent.
And if in
fact... How does the legislative history here evidence any more punitive intent than was the case in Bell South.
Well, did, with regard to the Bell South decision, if they had said that Bell South is, in fact, regulated and has to pay a penalty specifically for whatever its conduct is, and other direct competitors that were, in fact, influenced.
Prohibitions here applied only to the Bell South, the Baby Bells. It applied only to the BOCs.
Understand. And what we also have, Judge, is you have the context of what amounts to an industry that the Congress had determined, and as a practical matter, was almost a monopoly. And so one of the things that they were dealing with in Bell South is a monopoly. We don't have that issue here. This is supposed to be free market.
Monopoly, so that they were, in fact, basing their... Because the monopoly was gone at the time of the Bell South case.
Yeah, but the practicality is, Judge,
the
that
the law forbade those companies by name from doing things that their competitors could do.
Correct.
I don't understand yet how you're getting around Bell South.
Well, first of all, we don't have, in fact, as I said, an industry that was a monopoly. If you take a look at Con Edison, by the way, which also is a regulatory monopoly, the situation is similar here. You cannot prevent in the future Con Ed from achieving payment for the outage, just like here in the future, based upon their past conduct. You cannot take a penalty from GH and Sarah Farms while exempting everyone else.
You didn't get around Bell South in anything I heard you say there, Counsel.
Bell
South was forbidden from doing anything, doing things its competitors could do. They could not enter the electronic publishing.
Of course, and
They could not. They were forbidden from doing it.
What we do not have here, Judge, is a complete record, because I've not been allowed to get the complete record, and this court needs it to make the context decision.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Submitted.